I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, Episode 9, Our Favorite Books.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Baker Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burke Wolder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Hi, welcome to I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the podcast where it's always 1895. Before we get into the show this week, just a quick note. Bert and I recorded this episode back in July. I think this was our third episode that we ever recorded. We've held it until now because we've had so many other interesting interviews and topics to cover before we got to this that we thought it was important for you to hear those other things. As a result, we make reference to some things that we may have talked about in a previous episode that we recorded but have not yet aired, and we have referenced other things that you've already heard us talk about. So I just want everyone to be aware of that as we go into this episode, and stay tuned at the end of the episode for some interesting information about how to continue to connect with us. Let's go to the show. I'm Scott Monty.
And I'm Bert Wolder.
And we're here together to bring you kind of the latest commentary on, well, whatever comes to our mind with regard to Sherlock Holmes.
That is, yes, and that's a very wide area. Anything is possible.
Well, on today's show, we really wanted to concentrate on the fundamentals of what brings Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts together, and that really is books. Everyone, or most people, I should say, have been attracted to the Sherlock Holmes character through the stories, although there are some who have come to the canon by way of movies or TV, and I'm sure we'll do another show about that in the future. But today we're concentrating on books, and the books that are the most important to us or that have the most profound effect on us throughout our Sherlockian association.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a very good intro. You know, you can... This is early on, you know, in this sort of podcast journey, and you know, I think both of us are feeling our way a bit. But one of the things that seemed to us to be a particularly fertile ground to talk about was, you know, as Scott says, that first encounter with a book that really made an impact, because you know, that tends to be so much a part of all of our experiences.
Absolutely. And we're going to have some links in the show notes about the topics that we're talking about. But in addition, there's a comprehensive list that was put together years ago by one of the most prominent Sherlockians of all time by the name of John Bennett Shaw. And it's a list called the Basic Holmesian Library, or the Shaw 100. And he basically came up with the 100 cornerstone titles that every Sherlockian should have. So we will we'll post a listing of those 100 books on the podcast site, along with the various links on how to acquire those books.
Oh, and how to acquire those books.
That's the important part.
Mm,
you know,
okay.
If your library does not include these 100, then, well, I guess you can't call yourself complete or a completist. Because Shaw, and this is probably a great point to talk about Shaw, and Bert, you probably had the advantage of actually meeting the man. I never knew him. So why don't you talk a little bit about your impressions of John Bennett Shaw?
My impressions of John Bennett Shaw. Well, John, you know, he was much beloved in my experience. You know, my first sort of major time of engagement with the Baker Street Irregulars was in the 1970s. And John was a totally unique character to me. You know, there are many, many folks who knew him much more closely and much better than I did. I only saw John at dinners, you know, perhaps two or three times a year. But he was warm, avuncular, knowledgeable, thoughtful. He was a fabulous, fabulous collector and assembled, and obviously as anyone would, who would come up with a thoughtful, reasoned list of the top 100 books one would have in sort of a basic Sherlockian library, read widely and deeply, and I suppose to your point, Scott, was something of a completist. And of course, his collection, his letters, his papers, his materials live after him. But John was warm, embracing, fun, deeply knowledgeable. He you know, I imagine had a lot in common with Morley and Smith, in that, despite his professional role, and he was a funeral director from New Mexico, as I remember, was really a man of letters. You know, he had a scholarly mind. He was interested in many things, and he was very giving with a commodity with which many people today can be a bit stingy, and that is his time and attention. You know, when John Bennett Shaw was talking to you, you know, you really had the sense that he was paying attention to what you had to say and was interested in you. He was a wonderful, wonderful man.
Yeah, from what I understand, he would regularly invite people to his home and have them stay over. And I guess one of the places that he put them up was in his library. He would set up a cot in there, and some of the more trepidatious adventurers would be in there and be wondering if the bookshelves would cave in on them overnight. But, you know, they certainly had plenty of good reading material to put them to sleep at night.
See, now that's something that would be very interesting. You know, it's a shame that John has passed, because it would be fascinating to know what his first meeting with Sherlock Holmes was.
That's true.
How he first encountered Holmes.
Well, and actually, this is a great opportunity for you out there listening. If you have some memories of John Bennett Shaw that you'd like to share with us, either in writing or over the phone, you can send an email to us at comment@ihearofsherlock.com, or you can call our listener hotline at 774-221-7323. That's area code... it's +1 area code 774-221-READ. We'd love to hear if you have any tales to tell us about John Bennett Shaw or any particular special memories. One of the things that Bert mentioned is that Shaw's collection lives on, and it actually lives on at the University of Minnesota Libraries. When just before John passed away, he had all of his belongings packed up, all of his Sherlockian belongings. And they amounted to, ironically, 221 boxes that made it by way of many, many trucks from New Mexico up to Minnesota, and are the foundation of, you know, one of the most impressive Sherlock Holmes collections in the world. So if you're ever in Minnesota, and I know there's a conference going on there in early July, in conjunction with the library, make sure you see the Bennett Shaw collection. So why don't we get on to the focus of the show here, which is to talk about our favorite books from our Sherlockian collection. Bert, I have a sneaking suspicion that the book that you're going to talk about is a little bit older than the one that I'm going to talk about. So why don't you tell us what you picked and why it is... why it's part of your collection, why it's special to you, and what you think about it.
Well, the book that I picked is Profiles by Gaslight. I have a very well-loved edition. It was published in 1944 by Simon & Schuster, and the subtitle of the book is An Irregular Reader About the Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, and it was edited by Edgar W. Smith. We'll probably get to, in subsequent shows, some conversation about the early days of the Baker Street Irregulars and how things like the Baker Street Journal and this book came to be published. But I picked this book to talk about just because of its special meaning to me, because for a long while in my life as a Sherlockian, I suppose, this book was something of the Holy Grail. You know, it's not not easy to cast your mind back to those pre-internet, pre Alibris, Amazon.com, ABE books days. Yeah. But in those happy, dusty days, you would spend many hours wandering around old bookshops and in New York and wherever I happened to travel, because in the early part of my career, you know, I was traveling a good deal. I'd always find a local bookshop and be puttering around looking for things. But it was never particularly easy to find profiles by Gaslight. And when you did find copies, even in those days, they were really sort of out of reach of my pocketbook. And this book, like all of my books, I'm far from a completist. And I don't consider myself a collector, although I'm surrounded by so many things I must be a collector. But I got this and all the other books in my collection.
You sound like an accumulator.
Yeah, I guess I am. To read, you know, and this, suffice it to say that this is a collection of essays. But this is, to my mind, you know, the perfect Sherlockian book. I mean, even the cover. Now, I don't have a dust jacket on my well-loved copy. But the cover of this particular book is embossed with a profile of Holmes. And it's one of those beautiful Giletti, Rathbone-y, deerstalkery, piping profiles that's so stuck in my mind as a kid. And when you open it up, there's a marvelous frontispiece, elements of which Scott has brought to bear on the website for I Hear of SherlockEverywhere.com, that is a map done by the much-loved and lamented Julian Wolfe, who for many years, who succeeded Edgar Smith as the commissioner of the Baker Street Irregulars. And this, to my mind, is just a perfect book. And this particular book, you know, this is one of those cases where I was lucky enough to find it in an old bookshop at a reasonable price, something like $7 or $8 at the time, and add it into my stack. And this is one of those books to me that when I opened it up, just got better and better. It opens up to a terrific frontispiece illustration of a very Giletian Holmes drawn by Frederick Doorsteel. It's dedicated to Arthur Conan Doyle. And you know, the wonderful thing about this book, even though it was published in wartime, and there earned a footnote about using lighter weight paper, is it feels like a book. Oh. It's stitched together, you know, the paper has a certain heft and substance, and it's got a wonderful commentary after the frontispiece. The characters in this book are real persons. Any resemblance to fictional characters, living or dead, is purely accidental. And it's that spirit that infects the whole thing. It's a marvelous collection of observations from, I guess, folks you would look upon now as being part of that gilded age of Sherlockian commentary, but people of letters like Louis Untermeyer and, of course, Vincent Starrett, Howard Haycraft, who edited several fascinating anthologies and mystery stories. There's a poem by Conan Doyle, commentary from Anthony Boucher, Chris Morley, Charles Hance, whom I'd also met, Belden Wigglesworth, Bill Hall, Logan Clendenning. But
giants.
You know, giants. But beyond all that, you know, it's what makes this book special is it's just the spirit that infused it and the fabulous job Edgar did in pulling it together. His foreword begins, "Sherlock Holmes was born on the 6th of January, 1854, in the town of Mycroft in the North Riding of Yorkshire. We can have little patience with those who are ignorant of this vital fact, who believe in their innocence that he sprang full panoplied from the brow of Conan Doyle, or that his birth occurred far from Yorkshire and as late as 1887 in the cold bed of the printed page. Such mundane fancies are unworthy of the deeper reality." And then he goes on, and it's just magnificent. And even the intro by Louis Untermeyer. But you know, what was special about this was the absolute mesmerizing spell of informed commentary, thoughtful observation. Even Chris Morley, excerpts here of Chris Morley's various writings, the notes from the resident patient, are just marvelous. In a series of you know, little paragraphs here and there, Morley seems to be dripping with fodder for fantastic Sherlockian.
Yeah, and there was more of that to come in the Baker Street Journal once they launched it 2 years after this book was published.
Yeah, and so in many ways, I expect, you know, this book was sort of the great impetus towards the publishing adventure.
Yeah.
But anyway, this has always been to me, and it's got everything.
It really
does. It's got the true and proper coat of arms, genealogy, the singular adventures of Martha Hudson. It's just a magnificent and very warming collection. And when I look at it, it really takes me back to the hunt for it and to actually finding it and doing it.
Well, it's funny because I'm actually holding my copy in my hand right now. I hold in my hand my copy, which just like you said, I was part of the hunt. When I was in college and in graduate school in Boston, there were a number of used bookstores around Boston, and I used to love taking a Saturday afternoon and just winding my way from one to the next and just, as the Woodhouseians put it, browsing and sluicing and just enjoying the hunt. And one day in, I think it was Nick's Mystery Bookshop on Newbury Street, I came across this one. It was a little pricey for a graduate student, or I think it was a college student at the time. I think it was about $35. But mine does have the dust jacket, and you open it up, and penciled on just after the frontispiece, it says "Correct First Edition," and then the next page has a review slip from Simon & Schuster Publishers, the business reply card. First class to Simon & Schuster in Rockefeller Center. Says, "Information, please. The publishers would like to know whether this book has lived up to your expectations. If so, why? And if not, why not? Please indicate in the space below the reason or reasons which prompted the purchase of this book." And, you know, I think of that, and that's really the discussion we're having here today, you know, discussing the publisher's reply card some 63 years later. And it's just wonderful to have an artifact of history in my hand, to know that somebody picked this up from, you know, a bookshop, the Barnes & Noble or the Borders of its time, and held this in their hands as brand new when this movement was just coming about. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, you know, it really is. It was a passport. For me, it was a passport to the whole world, you know, because it And it gave you all of the lenses, the people following their own particular pursuits, you know, and it's such a magnificent representation of how special that age was.
Absolutely.
Where you had a Julian Wolfe who for most of his career was a medical doctor and who retired at the earliest opportunity to pursue what he truly loved to do, but who also had an interest in cartography. Mm-hmm. Or a businessman like Edgar Smith who could with not too much trouble, apparently, compose fabulous essays and poetry. Or a lifelong bookman and newspaperman like Vincent Starrett, or somebody like Haywood Brown. So, you know, also what resonated to me from this book was the fact that this interest in Holmes and this literature and this time, the romanticism, the appreciation, the canvas it presents for people's own interests, was cut a very wide swath through society. You know, it was really an open door.
Yeah.
So in an odd way, I felt very included in it.
Well, and I think it might be appropriate to end our discussion of this book with an actual recording of a piece that is included in the pages. One of the most famous poems of this book and of the Sherlockian movement is one that is read at the conclusion of every Baker Street Irregulars dinner. And earlier this year, in January of 2007, we were treated to a reading, or an interpretation rather than a reading, of this poem by none other than Paxton Whitehead, the esteemed stage and screen actor. So here I give you the recording of Paxton Whitehead reading Vincent Starrett's 221B.
221B by Vincent Starrett. Here dwell together still two men of note, who never lived and so can never die. How very near they seem, yet how remote that age before the world went all awry. But still the game's afoot, for those with ears attuned to catch the distant view halloo. England is England yet, for all our fears. Only those things the heart believes are true. A yellow fog swirls past the window pane as night descends upon this fabled street. A lonely hansom splashes through the rain. The ghostly gas lamps fail at 20 feet. Here, though the world explode, these two survive. And it is always 1895.
Wow. Well, that,
fabulous.
That is a reading. I was going to say, you know, you had to be there, but thanks to the genius of technology and the recordable iPod, you were there.
You are there. Well, that's very fitting, too, since part of the rights and privileges of you know, this world we're inhabiting is the ability to go everywhere and do everything.
Okay, great.
But it's wonderful to hear Paxton.
Yeah.
And it's a terrific reading. I never get tired of that.
You bet. So I've picked out a favorite book of my own, and it's actually a group of books, but I will focus only on one of them. Bert and I are both members of the Speckled Band of Boston, which is an august Scion Society, and it is a Scion Society of the Baker Street Irregulars. It is actually the first Scion outside of the New York area. It was founded in 1940, and we meet once a year, every spring. And early on in its history, first of all, members of the band were notable regulars down at the BSI weekends, P.M. Stone and Jim Keddy Sr., and later Jim Keddy Jr., Eldon Wigglesworth, and actually a notable Bostonian by the name of H.W. Bell, who was corresponding with Dorothy Sayers early on. A lot of his writings were the cornerstone of the Sherlockian studies. So in 1947, the Speckled Band produced its first set of papers. It's called The Second Cab. I don't know why there was never a first. Suppose you...
it is the first Second Cab.
That's true. It was 15 Sherlockian essays, one sonnet, and a quiz. And then the Third Cab came rumbling by in 1960, 13 years later. Now, the Third Cab is actually my favorite book, not because its content is any more valuable or interesting. Indeed, all of the cabs that the Speckled Band has produced, which... we are now up to the fifth cab, and then the, I guess the Speckled Band's attempt at a little more revenue at one point, the best of the cabs made an appearance. But the third cab, in my mind, is really a, this copy is remarkable, because it's copyright 1960. I've got copy 477 out of 500. But the reason it intrigues me so, and that I picked it up at Otto Penzler's Mysterious Bookshop in New York a few years ago during one of the BSI weekends, is it is signed inside by the entire executive committee of the band. Douglas Lawson, Philip Mather, Richard Waite, and James Keddy Jr. And it's inscribed the 20th anniversary dinner of the Speckled Band, The Signet Society, Cambridge, April 22nd, 1960.
Mm.
And then you open it a few pages, and on the appreciation page, there's a number of people listed, and the final person listed is Edgar Button Smith, who has stood in loco grand parentis to an infant born to immature parents, the editors of the Third Cab. And then it's signed right there by Edgar Smith.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, this is a book from the spring of 1960, and Edgar passed away in October of 1960. So this was his final Speckled Band meeting. He had gone to a number of them and was great friends with a number of the Bostonians. And he someone had the foresight to have him sign this book. And inside, if we're actually talking about contents in addition to just the wrapper here, we've got... the best introduction to Holmes, The Battle of Charing Cross, The Speckled Band, What Is It? By Douglas Lawton. Lawson, Watson Medicus, The Authorship of the Tales Within the Tales by Edgar Smith himself. Always a good one. Holmes and Thorndike, A Real Friendship.
Oh, I'd like to read that. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that. I'm a big Dr. Thorndike.
Yeah, you were talking last time about Thorndike, I believe. So, it's just a wonderful collection of essays that made it into the Speckled Band's holdings over time and were collected in this book, which, now thanks to the inscription and the signatures, in my mind, has made it a really valuable piece.
Yeah.
And being someone who, knows the whole of the executive committee of the Speckled Band now, it just has that much more meaning.
It's wonderful, too, that organizations like the Speckled Band, there's a wonderful all the Sherlock Holmes groups, that I've ever come in contact with have been wonderful and interesting and fun in one way or another. But there's one in Yale, the Yale Sherlock Holmes Society, which Dr. David Musto likes to describe as the completely non-existent Sherlock Holmes Society. And in a way, you look back at something like the Speckled Band, and like all of this stuff, beginning with the 1934 first inaugural BSI event at Chris Sellers, like all this stuff, it would not have taken very much for all of this to fall by the wayside, but you find something like the Second Cab, the Speckled Band, the Organizing Committee, here, just because of love and passion and interest and excitement, something kicks off and time passes, and 67 years later, it's still chugging along.
I know. It's amazing. So great. Well, do you have any comments about any societies that you belong to? Maybe you'd like to give us a call at 774-221-7323. That's +1-774-221-READ. Tell us about your experience, something that strikes your fancy, a favorite book, a favorite meeting, something that's been going on for a while. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we really would. And, just in listening to our own conversation at some point soon in this series, we probably do need to do a little backgrounding because although it's not our intention, it's certainly not Scott's intention or my intention to dwell relentlessly on the past, which could be pretty boring, particularly if you're not interested in it. But some of these names, Chris Morley, Edgar Smith, people who have been who came before us in their passion for, their love of, their interest in the life and literature of Sherlock Holmes, probably deserve some, explaining in conversation, which we'll get to in future episodes. So if you haven't heard of Edgar Smith or Chris Morley, or you really don't have any sense of how all this came to be, we're not going to dwell on it to the exclusion of other things, but we'll try to bring everybody sort of up to a common level of understanding in a future episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there's anybody that you'd like to hear us highlight that we're not mentioning, just give us a shout and let us know. Certainly you can leave us an email too, comment@IHearOfSherlockEverywhere.com, and give us some input. And if if there's someone that we should be interviewing or speaking to about some of this history, we would love to hear from you. Well, as is our tradition, we will close with one of the editor's gas lamps from an early Baker Street journal. This one is from Volume 2, Number 2, by Edgar Smith. This is the old series of the Baker Street Journal. So this would be from 1947. It's titled, Let Me Recommend This Book. And I will excerpt it because it is a little long. If you'd like to read the entirety of this editor's gas lamp, you can purchase the Baker Street Journal CD-ROM, which contains the first 50 years of the journal in a handy four-pack of CDs you can read on your computer. It's available for purchase, I think, on the Baker Street Journal website at bakerstreetjournal.com. A while ago, I read one of Clark Russell's Fine Sea Stories. The attendant circumstances were not, perhaps, all that they might have been. There was no equinoctial gales blowing, and it could not well be said that the great elemental forces were shrieking at me through the bars of my civilization. Neither did I hear at any time a sound like the sobbing of a child in a chimney. Yet I found, when I dropped anchor at the last page, that the good ship Mohawk had taken me on a pleasantly exciting voyage, and I was led to wonder, from the experience I had had, why more heed has not been paid, as occasion offered, to the many excellent reading hints that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson have given us. Holmes' own favorite, as we all know, was Winwood Reade's The Martyrdom of Man. This remarkable book, one of the most remarkable ever penned, was published in London in 1872 by Trubner and Company, and I am fortunate in owning a first-edition copy, which bears the hardly decipherable inscription on its flyleaf, S. Holmes, 1875, ex dono fratris, M.H. Association values such as this are fascinating in their own right, of course, but they add no essential ingredient to the enjoyment of the intrinsic offering provided. My Mohawk is an Appleton reprint of uncertain date, which Watson surely never saw. Yet its villains are not less villainous in consequence, nor its heroine one whit less virtuously seductive. The flavor of good, rich corn is never lost through repackaging. Winwood Reade, it must be said, is a writer to be taken in smaller and less hasty doses than Clark Russell. He was one of the restless pioneering souls of his generation, a vigorous champion of Darwinism in the fierce battle of the giants that was still raging when the Baker Street scene was young. Besides Reade and Russell, who get top acclaim, there are many other writers and writings recommended in the saga, directly or by the implication of example, from which we might occasionally draw inspiration. Goethe and Flaubert, Carlyle and Richter, Hafitz and Horace, all of these, we may suppose, are to be taken more or less for granted. But who has been moved to seek out Eckermann's voodooism and the Negroid religions for the enlargement of his vision and the improvement of his mind? And who has thought to apply himself, for the benefit of all mankind, to the identification of the critical appraisal of the origin of tree worship, and British birds, and the Holy War? I boast a Catullus in my own collection, and Aldine, published in 1558. But I also have Moat's Adventures and Researches Among the Andaman Islanders, London, 1863, which Watson must have read, although he never mentions it, when he was documenting himself for The Sign of Four. But J.G. Wood's Out of Doors I have never come upon. Someday I hope to find it, and when I do, I shall read it with great eagerness, for Sherlock Holmes said of it, we must recall, "Here is a book which first brought light into what might have been forever dark." That is quite a recommendation for any book.
Well done.
I think Edgar's much easier read than much easier read on the printed page than spoken.
Well, he was writing.
He certainly was, and we are speaking for listeners.
That's right.
And I speak for myself when I say this has been a great show.
Yes. Well, it's been great talking to you, and I'm looking forward to our next chat.
All right. Well, thanks everybody, and we'll see you next time.
And now for that information I promised you at the beginning of the show. I just wanted to let you know that I've established a group for the podcast on Facebook. That's facebook.com. The group is I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere. And if you're not familiar with Facebook, you should be. It's the number one social networking site in the world right now. It's grown, particularly in the 35 and older group, but you'll find people of all ages there, who are there to share common interests, such as an interest in Sherlock Holmes. There's also an associated group for the Baker Street blog, as well as the Baker Street Journal. I've set both of those up. I'll have a link on the show website, ihearofsherlock.com, so you can actually link in to the Facebook group, check it out, and see if it's right for you. It may not be the thing for everyone, but it's a way that we're going to use to communicate to our members on a regular basis, so I hope you'll try that out. In addition, we have a Twitter account at twitter.com. You can open one very easily,
And essentially, this is a way for you to follow us in a micro-blogging platform. So if you don't want to get an email when the show is updated or when the site is updated, you can register on Twitter and get notified via phone, via text message, or simply by going on to the Twitter site and checking it out. The beauty of Twitter is that you can put together a whole group of friends and be talking to each other in groups. It's a pretty powerful platform, and you're limited to only 140 characters, so people are forced to be very succinct in what they say. It's really worth checking out. I highly recommend that as well. So you can join both the I Hear of Sherlock Facebook group and become part of the I Hear of Sherlock Twitter network. Look for continued improvements as the technology allows and as we experiment. I hope we'll get some feedback from you on what works for you, what doesn't, what you like, what you don't, and what you would like to hear more of. You can reach us again at 774-221-READ, comment at ihearofsherlock.com, or leave your comments directly on the website. Thank you again for being with us. I hope you'll join us again next time when we interview... Well, I think I'll be holding that information until shortly before the next show. Stay tuned to see who our interview guest is. And until then, the game's afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I'm neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.